Hello, I'm your host, Leonard Duncan. Welcome to a new episode of ATV Talk and Motorsports Podcast. Please join us every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We bring you interviews with industry professionals, live events, live news about the motorsports industry in every episode. Enjoy the show. Whether we are out riding with our friends and family or racing in extreme environments, we all need good tires. That's why I recommend GBC Power Sports Tires, a division of Greenball Corp. Their products, which include XC Master, Mini Master, and Groundbuster 3, are what leading professionals in the ATV-UTV industry are using. You can get your tires at greenballtires.com or find them on Instagram as GBC Tires for further inquiry. Are you looking for the best suspension technology for your sport ATV? Look no further than Elka Suspension, the industry leader in sport ATV suspension technology. With championship wins in prestigious events such as the Dakar Rally, SCORE, Best in the Desert, ATV MX, Cross Country, and Works, Elka Suspension has established itself as the go-to choice for athletes and enthusiasts alike. But they don't just stop at ATVs. They're constantly expanding into new markets, including UTVs, trucks, SUVs, pit bikes, snowmobiles, and more. Their commitment to innovation and quality means they're always looking to improve and adapt so you can enjoy a smooth ride wherever you go. Want to learn more about what Elka Suspension can do for you? Visit their website at elkasuspension.com. or give them a call at 450-655-4855. They will always be happy to answer your questions and help you find the perfect suspension solution for your needs. Braxton Gross, welcome back to ATV Talk. Brother, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I can't complain at all. Oh, man, it's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. It's been a while, but I got excited to come on here and talk about something.
Oh, dude, you got lots of stuff to talk about. You know, you've been doing training on the East Coast and the West Coast. I want to, before we get into some of the meat and potatoes of what we're here for, I wanted to ask questions about the training that you do on the East Coast. I seen a video of you doing some woods riding. It looks to me like you take to it pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff over there, I mean, obviously it's way different than here, but I mean, like, it's just a little bit like, not slower pace, but just a little bit more technical. You just kind of got to, like, I mean, it's a lot more focused. You got to be really focused. You got to be a lot more precise. I like it. I'm still able to make quick movements, be pretty precise on the bike, but I mean, yeah, I took into it pretty well, and I mean, had good success so far, yeah.
Do you notice that there's a physical difference between the two?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually kind of funny. Like, at the end of a GNCC race, it's almost like I'm not as tired than I would be after, like, a works race. Like, it's just a little bit different type of intensity. On the East Coast, it's way more like the first lap, everybody's just kind of out there, like almost learning the track. Obviously you're still moving, but everybody's out there just like getting the first lap like done. We're all just kind of learning together. And then it's like, then you set into your race pace. Or at home, it's more or less more just like, as soon as the green flag waves, it's an all out sprint, like right from there to the end. So I feel like racing works is actually prepared me a little bit more than what I thought. I thought I was going to struggle a little bit more, but as far as my physical aspect, I've been doing great. I haven't been struggling at all. It's different, but it's actually been helping me. The short sprint speeds have actually like helped me a lot over there.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I'm glad to hear that. I was thinking it was going to be the other way around. The technical strength moves that where you have to move the bike around more, even at a slower pace, you were having to use more physical body
to ride versus a sprint race on the West Coast.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely what I thought too, but it's a weird deal. It's a weird feeling for sure. Like, cause I mean, yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I was prepared to get over there and be done with my race and just be like absolutely cooked. And I mean, I am like, for sure. Like it's not easy, but it's weird. I thought it was going to be a lot harder to adjust, but it's not, it hasn't been as difficult as I thought.
Well, that's awesome to hear. I like that. You ride a Honda over there as well.
Yep, I ride a Honda over there and over here both still, yeah.
What are the main differences between the two bikes?
Between my Honda at home and my Honda out there, really, I mean, not a whole heck of a lot. I mean, so obviously my bike over there is narrower, and I don't actually know how much narrower it is. I think it's over an inch. I think it might be closer to 2 inches narrower, but I'm still running Doug Roll's A-arms, but his XC version, and then the axle that I'm running is just a narrow version of the axles there. But as far as bike goes, we do run some different suspension. Our suspension is actually a little bit lower to the ground over there. Like we have, I forget what it's actually called, but the shock is actually shorter that we run over there than the shock that we run over here. And it also has to do with like, we run a different linkage over here. We run we run Doug's linkage, which just is way lower to the ground, but over there, they don't like to use it just because it's kind of like an anchor during the mud races. It just sticks down a little bit farther. Those are like the main differences though. Everything else on my bike is the exact same. We're running same motor, same everything. Same everything set up, just bike's a little bit narrower.
Do you have any trouble with the mud?
No, I mean, well, I think I had the one legit mud race, and it was I mean, you see it everywhere, like even in Supercross, like you watch it on TV, just like a mud race is just like anybody's race. It's just like it all just depends on your, it's not luck, but it kind of falls into play like that. You just kind of like, you ride smart, like you ride slow, and you literally just have to ride slow. You have to really be thinking ahead. And at this last race, the big mud race, I had a great day. It just ended up me getting like stuck. Like I just got like suction cupped into some deep mud, and that's what caused me to drop back. I was running third all day until then, and then I finished seventh. But it's just a lot of smart movements, not like let's rush, let's get ahead. It's a little bit easier for me to follow people, honestly, because I'm just not used to it yet. So getting the whole shot would have been cool, but it was a lot easier to follow than having to leap through that stuff.
Right, I'll bet. Coming from dust and rocks to soup and mud, it was a totally different world. Adam McGill is a diehard Honda guy, gonna ride Honda till the day he quits racing. Based on your travels back and forth, could you see a day when you're on a Yamaha?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on how far, you know, my career goes. I think there's probably going to be a day, you know, like there's just going to be a time where unless Honda starts making them again, which I don't know, it probably would just make sense at that point to switch. But I mean, yeah, I mean, right now we like our setup. We like what we're running. But I mean, like in the future, yeah, I mean, if my career like takes off and I really can get a groove going, then you got to do what you got to do to stay up there. I mean, it's not a big deal for me. Like this is just what I've ran. It's nothing against like a Yamaha. It's nothing against any other bike. It's what I know. So right now it's just the comfort. It's the comfort. I know my bike and I know what it does. So it's just like, until I have to, I won't. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be a day, I'm sure, for sure. Yeah.
What about switching from being a West Coast racer to an East Coast racer? Could you see that happening in your future?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, I'm not for sure. I mean, I love works racing. I love it over here. I mean, I mean, obviously this is what I've learned. This is what I've done. But if that's where the sports takes me and that's where I'm able to make a career out of, like if over here, I just can't make it happen. And you know, companies are more interested on racers on the East Coast, and I'm going to go wherever I need to go to, you know, make this a career. You know, I'd love to do this. So whatever it's going to take for me to do that, I'll do that. But I like the GNCC stuff. I could say, yeah, I mean, I would probably consider myself going over there like full time, maybe in the future sometime.
Would you graduate to the pro class over there after one season, one full season in the XC2 class? Or do you think that you need an extra season to season yourself?
I mean, it kind of depends on how the season goes, honestly. Like, I feel good right now, and all the riders that I'm riding with, these guys have been in the pro-am class for a while, and they're all pretty seasoned, and our overall standings, like if you look in the overall, half the time we end up in the top overall anyways. So it's kind of just kind of depends on how I'm feeling at the end of this year. I mean, like, you know, if I don't even get on the podium, if I'm like pretty far off the pace, then I'll just stay another year and just get a little bit more seasoned. But I mean, yeah, it just all depends on how I feel at the end of this year. And if I feel like I've made growth, or if I feel like there's a lot more I have to work on, it all just kind of depend on, yeah, how I feel at the end of the year, really.
That's awesome. You know, the works races were a few rounds ahead of the cross country until last weekend, when they had caught up to works, and then now works had another round. In round two, you had a little issue in works. Could you explain what happened?
Yeah, it was an unfortunate accident. We were going down this, I don't really know how to explain where it was on the track, but it was at Glen Helen. It was going down a straightaway. It was opening lap. So we were all really close together. We were still in a group because we were like, probably we weren't even a mile from the starting line. And, I was just dusted out, and it's actually funny enough. I was walking this section before the race that day. And, I saw this section. I was watching the pro dirt bikes, and there was this like barrier that was really, really close to the race course, but it was because it like narrowed up for a second. And I just kind of looked at it, and I was like, oh man, that's kind of sketchy. Like, you got to pay attention for that. And anyways, on the first lap, I was in Bo's dust because he got the whole shot. And it was like, I was in my head, I was like, okay, we're going down this road. I remember this barrier. And it was like, probably not even after a second after, I was like, man, I feel like we're getting close to that barrier. I hit the barrier. I think I was like dead on with it. And I just, from there, I mean, obviously, I don't know what happened. Everything happened so fast. It was, I hit the barrier. I went tumbling, and then my bike kind of went up on the road. And then Travis hit, because I like hit the barrier that was on the side of the road, moved it to the middle. Travis hit that. And then like Austin hit the back of Travis. And so it was just like a big pile up. And by time, like, I was the last person to get up. And by the time I got up, I was like, I wasn't feeling good. Like, I kind of felt like I went to the hospital just to get a checkup. I probably would have been okay. I think maybe like a minor concussion, but it wasn't anything bad enough to where there was a big issue. But my stem was bent, and like down into my gas tank, and luckily no damage to the frame or A-arms. But I wasn't able to finish the race. I was done on the first lap. So that kind of sucked, but, yeah, it was just a bad, unfortunate accident. You know, it happens as part of racing. So that's what happens, you know?
Is there any conflictions, during the XC season and the work series?
Yeah. So it's actually, We're pretty hardcore, you know. The last 7 weeks in a row, we raced every single weekend, going back and forth. And actually, the Blythe weekend and Tennessee is the only conflicting round. And I'm gonna race on Saturday in Tennessee, fly home that night, and then drive through the night to get to Blythe. And then I'm gonna race Blythe just to get points. I mean, obviously, we're going to show up. But I mean, yeah, I'm going to get there. I'm going to race both the rounds. It's going to be tough, but just to get the points down. Because even though I am pretty far behind in the worst points, I mean, anything can happen, you know. So we're still contending. We're not giving up completely. So we were like, if we're going to do this, we're going all in. And, you know, we're here for the fight. So we're going to go for it, yeah.
So you had that second place in the first round. You had the issue in the second round. Where did you come out in Marysville?
Marysville was another second place. Marysville was such a rough race for me. I don't know why. Like, the first two or three laps was just like, I mean, I couldn't hold on. I just felt like I couldn't do anything right. And I mean, literally, I got second off the start. And by the time we got done with the third lap, I mean, Bo and Travis probably had like 30 to 40 seconds on me. And it was just like, I didn't even know what I was doing. I was like, something's wrong. Like, but anyways, by the end of the race, a lot of frustration and just like, what are you doing? And I ended up just starting to put the hammer down, and I ended up catching back up to Travis, and I was putting on time on Bo at the end. But yeah, it was a rough race for me, but we ended up second still. So I can't complain, but I wish I had a better start to that race.
Well, when we go to the first round of the GNCC, we're talking to the normal guys that I talk to, we're scanning results, we're doing the things that we do. And you know what? I look through the results as fast as I possibly can. And, you know, I glanced through there, and Alex had won the race, and I apologize to him every time I do a show, because I got so hung up on the guy in fifth that I totally forgot Alex's name. And, you know, it just wasn't fair to him, being that he was the guy that won that round.
Yeah.
And you got fifth. And I was like, you know, talking with the other XC guys that I know, and a couple of the other people, and we were excited that a West Coast guy, even though it's XC2, went over there and was in the top five.
Yeah.
It was great. I like to see Logan Huff's progress as well. He seems to be gaining ground the more he goes back there. But you just put on one hell of a ride.
Yeah. The first round was big buck, and it was a learning race for sure. I got a terrible start, and I definitely learned that you can't have those if you want to run with the top guys. And there was a point in the race where we caught up. I was riding with this one kid, Tavin Cook. Me and him were like together basically the whole race. We were fourth and fifth. I was in fourth like the whole race. He caught me in like the last lap. And we were actually moving. There was a point in the race where it just worked out perfectly that the top three guys had a pit a lap earlier. So we rode one whole lap behind them until me and Tavin pit together. And then we were just riding by ourselves, and then Tavin got me at the end. So at that race, I knew that I had the pace to run with those guys, because we ran with them for a whole lap. It wasn't uncomfortable. It wasn't, you know, like out of my league. So I was like, okay, you know, walk out with a fifth solid finish. And I knew I could ride with them. So then going to Florida, I was like, all right, it's a little bit more of my speed. I just need a good start. That's exactly what I got. I got like second off the start, and maybe like a little issue on the first lap, but I was able to run with the top guys. And I was just like, from there, it was just like, all right, I know what I'm doing. I just got to start putting down the laps. And that's exactly what I did. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Florida. Everything that I saw video wise and everything I've done, they say it's just whoops, 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 and more whoops. And then if you didn't catch that, the fact that there were whoops, that there were more whoops.
There was more whoops. Yeah.
How did your works preparation set you up for that?
Honestly, I mean, it's funny talking to those guys. It's funny talking to Adam, especially, likes to give me crap, but he's always like, what's worse? Is Havasu worse or is Florida worse? And where I ride, everything I ride is like whoops out here. Everything I ride, it's just what the terrain is where I live, you know? So the preparation going into that race, that's just like, that's all I know. So I was especially ready for that race. I mean, I was excited for that race because I was like, okay, this is a little bit more my speed. But when I got there, when I rode the track, when I saw everything, it was just like, It was exactly like home. It was like riding at home, except there were a few trees on the side of the track. But besides that, it was pretty comfy. There wasn't anything that was out of my comfort zone. It was all just, it was a good track. And I mean, yeah, obviously you saw, I've put down some solid laps there and it ended out good.
Where'd you end up overall?
Eighth overall.
So eighth overall, first in XC2, which is Pro-Am. And anybody that's listening, that's yes, on the West Coast, Braxton is a professional. On the East Coast, in a totally different discipline, that I would say you need seasoning to go into the pro class. I can see you why you're running in the XC2 class, and so that there's anybody that's questioning it. You have to learn that a little bit. It's easier for the East Coast guys to come west and ride with us than it is for the West Coast guys to go east. And most of your East Coast guys will tell you the same thing. They've won a few races where I don't think anybody from the West has went back to the East and won.
No, it is. It's 100% easier. And not easier. It's just when it's the difference of the racing is from us to there is like a shell shock. And from there to here, it's more of just like, this is already what we do, except we just have a little bit more room for error. Over there, like everything else, everything just becomes a little bit more about perfectionist riding. And over here, you have got a little bit more room for error, a little bit more room to, you know, get yourself out of trouble. Where over there, it's all about the smart. So it's maybe not even the speed factor, but it's the fact that I can go over there and be as fast as possible for one whole lap until I hit a tree or I take the wrong line. It's just, it's the mental game is being smart and seasoned. That's what hurts us the most about going over there.
When you, do you do the track walk like most of the guys do?
Yeah, I actually, thank you to Johnny Gallagher, because I bum his bike every single weekend. I bum his e-bike and I ride it. We e-bike the track together. Sometimes I do it with I got like a family that I usually stay with over there and the two boys that they race. One of them races the hybrid 250 class and then the other one races, I think it's College C or something like that. And we're just, that's who we've always been with. So I either bike the track with them or I bike the track with, that's mainly who I bike the track with, either him or it's just me and my dad. But yeah, I bike the track at every single race. Super important to do that. You just get to check out, even though it's not like riding on it at all, it's just, you get to kind of see the general layout, see what you're about to get yourself into before you get out there.
Is that helping you with line choice and understanding where the fast guys pick the certain lines?
That's another thing. That's a season thing. Like I could go out there and I could ride that track 100 times and I could not even tell you where they were going to make their, like where the lines are going to be by the end of the race. I couldn't probably tell you every single time we're biking the track. Like my friends are pointing out stuff. I'm like looking my hardest and they're like, I'll point out a line and they're like, they like laugh. They're like, yeah, that's not going to be the right one. And then they show me one and I'm like, no, that's not going to be right. And they're always right. So it's like, that's just a season thing. You just got to learn what the racetrack develops like. And I just have no idea what it develops like. So I just look for stuff, but most of the time it's not right. So that's why following is most of the time a little bit easier, because I'm either taking the wrong lines or we're staying in the middle of the track the whole time.
When you're out there riding and lap one, the track is one way and you get there to lap two and it's totally different. What does that do for your mindset?
I think by that point in the race, by lap two, which lap two is like 30 minutes into your race, which is crazy. I'm like, so you're so into the race at that point that it's all just becomes like fluid. So like, it's not like what you would think of, like, where you're like coming into the section and you're like expecting it, or like expecting to hit the same line. When you're there, you're just like, everything's just like fluid. It's like, sometimes I've gone into sections before and just rode a different line, and I didn't even realize that it was a different line. You just do it. You just go. You're like, oh, that looks better, and you just go there instead of, like, you know, the lap before, I went to the right, and this lap I went to the left, and you won't even realize. You're just, like, you're just riding. You're in the zone at that point.
Nice, nice. When you were out riding Florida, based on all the things that I heard about it, what's something that you could tell us that is exciting about that course?
Exciting about Florida. And Florida, and there's this one section, I think it's the Monster Mile, that's like basically just this like half pipe of just like sand. And I don't know how it even got there, but it's literally like, if you think of a half pipe, it's just like a sand half pipe, and they like have you drop down, you jump out, then you do like a U-turn, then you drop back down. And it's just like this like section of track that's just like back and forth through just like beach sand. And I mean, that's pretty sick. But besides that, the Palmetto routes, you'll hear those guys talk about that all the time. And until this race, I had no idea what they meant. And now I learned what they meant. And it's just these gnarly, big old like tree roots that are like that big that just don't move. And when you hit them, it hurts your wrist a little bit. I got it twice. And I knew they were there after that.
Look, you knew what to look for after that?
Yeah, after I hit them and I like looked down and I saw it, I was like, that's what they're talking about. Okay, look out for those.
Hey, what a way to learn, right?
Yep, that's all it takes.
So, do you do anything different for eye preparation from the West Coast to the East Coast for your goggle prep?
Goggle prep? I mean, over here, I run all tear-offs. Over there, I run the roll-off system. As far as the goggle stuff, I could probably, at some races, run tear-offs over there. It's just... Sometimes with tear-offs, they make these things called tear-off gaskets, which I probably need to get some. But the issue with tear-offs is, just because even if it's the driest course of the year, there's still going to be a freaking mud puddle somewhere. Somewhere on the track, there's going to be a mud puddle. And when it splashes up, it gets in between your tear-offs, and it's like, you can pull one, but it's underneath like the last tear-off, so you have to pull all of them. And it's just like, it's one more thing to go wrong. Roll-off systems can go wrong too, but it's like, it's just easier. It's a lot less to think about, and it's just easier. It's easier to run those. I mean, I ran them at home sometimes too. Like if I'm like, I'm just gonna run roll-offs at this race. I run them here too, but I just always run the tear-offs, and over there, it's just smarter to run the roll-offs.
Nice. Well, I try to get information from the different riders to help any of the younger people that are listening about what they do for their goggle prep, because vision is so important. You know, it is, I don't want you to give your tricks away, because everybody's got a little thing they do to their goggles to prevent dust from filtering in, you know, where we used to put baby oil over the vents. Some people used to put Vaseline over them. I mean, and then some people didn't do anything. They just the way they were. So that's kind of what I was wondering, if all of the prep for things like that, are you prepping for water a certain way different than you would prep for dirt?
Yeah, I mean, the prep on on a GNTC bike compared to a works bike is completely different. Like, I mean, goggle wise for me, like, honestly, it's pretty, it's always the same. Like, no matter if it's going to be a dusty race or a wet race over there, I'm always running the same setup. I'm always running the same things. Nothing really special about it that I do, honestly. My setup's pretty basic as far as goggles go. It's just, I run Scott goggles, and it's just the roll-off system. And most of the time I put two or three tear-offs over top of the roll-off system. Just because on the first lap, when everybody's so close together, like when you just get like splattered with mud or just get a little bit of dirt on your goggles, like on the first lap, it's nice to just pull like one tear off, and then that way you have a full field of vision. If you have two of them, it's pretty nice, because by the time you're done with those, everything's a little bit more spread out. So once you get to that, it's a little bit easier. You're not getting like just sprayed right away. It's a little bit easier to handle the mud when you're like a couple miles into the track than when you're opening. So I just usually throw a couple over top.
So beans that you're more of a fair weather rider, what'd you think of Georgia?
I mean, it was gnarly. It was crazy. I had never done anything like it before. And, it was just like, I knew going into it, it was like a survival race basically, more or less. And that's exactly what it was. Like, I don't know, when you're a racer, like you always like say, you're like, oh, I'm just going out there and I'm just going to try to survive. But in the back of your head, you're always like, no, I'm going to go out there and go as fast as I can, no matter what. And it was like, I got out there and then I realized it really was more or less just about, you know, like being smart, slowing down, slower is faster. It wasn't like real racing. It was real racing, but it wasn't like the close, like gnarly battling that you like see sometimes. It's more or less like when you got like a big, big mud hole, you got to like let the guy in front of you go all the way. And then you go, you like, there were so many times during that race where I was just like sitting idling, waiting for the guy in front of me to finish this line. Cause I was like, well, if he gets stuck and I'm in the line, then I get stuck too. And then we're both screwed. So it's really just a brain game. Real, always thinking ahead. Never like you just always thinking, never can stop. Or that's when something wrong. That's when something bad goes wrong. When you just get comfortable, you can't get comfortable. You always got to be thinking ahead.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I have so much respect for all you guys that ride back there in the muck, because I wouldn't do it. I mean, I just, sorry. I mean, one of the worst things in the world to me is riding in muck, and it's no fun. The it's probably more the mental anguish I go through knowing what I have to do to the machine after we're done riding.
Yeah, that's the hardest part of it all. Like most of those guys, they are, you know, they have a lot of, they're tearing down their bikes after every single race. Like they're going into a full, like full bike prep bike. I mean, just, it's a lot different for us. It's really hard. That's where we're going to struggle the most this year. We haven't struggled with it yet, but I know in the future, this is where it's going to eventually catch up with us. If we do have some bad luck, it's going to be on the bike prep side, because it's so hard to make sure that your bike is fully ready to go after a race like that when you don't live there. And we only have like a couple days in between to get that bike fully ready. So that I have a feeling, unfortunately, if we run into problems, that's where it's going to be. It's going to be just like something dumb. Like, I don't even know. It's just going to be something dumb that's going to do it in the end, just because, you know, you have to work on these bikes so much. You have to be so meticulous, and you just not being there, not being with your bike, not being in your own shop with your own tools, it's really hard to do that. We're going to try our best, but it's going to be tough. That's going to be the hardest part.
Have you ever thought of not living in California?
No, I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, also I'm still 17. I mean, I still have to do school. I try my hardest, but right now that's probably not the case. But I mean, I spend a lot of time over there. Like after this next coming race this weekend, I'm gonna stay in Florida and work on my bike for an extra week before we go to Tennessee. So like when I go over there, most of the time I go over there for stretches of time. Like after each race, usually I'm staying like 3 days extra. It's not just like going to the race and leaving. I'm usually spending like probably a week there at a time, making sure everything's ready to go in between.
That's a lot of pressure for a 17-year-old.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I grew up working on all of our bikes. Like I know everything, but it's like, it's always nice when you have like dad's like nod of the head, like, did I do that right? And he goes, yep. And I don't have that sometimes when I'm over there working on my own bike. I'm like, all right, it's up to you now. Like, you got to nod your head at yourself. Yeah, you did that right. But that gets a little scary for sure. It is a lot of pressure, you know, because at that point, you know, it's all on you. There's nothing else there's nothing else anybody else can do. If something happens, it's on you. So it definitely makes it a little bit harder. Yeah.
Well, but it's good. It's building character and work ethic so that if you get out into the regular world without the racing, you're going to have work ethic. You're going to understand what it takes to get jobs done and handle things so that it's actually putting you in front of the other kids your age or young men, young ladies, you know, that aren't prepared for what.
I mean, for sure. That's always something that my dad does. I mean, yeah, like today, we just got home from Havasu, and then today I was out working with him on his truck and just like, because I mean, also, you know, this is really hard to do. So it's like, whenever we're at home, it's like, get the bike work done. And then it's like, gotta help me come work because we gotta get recouped from what we just lost. And then it's like, you know, it's just a never ending cycle. I don't mind it though. You know, that's all I've ever known. So it's like, it's normal. It's not like, I don't dread it. It's part of my life, you know?
Well, it's great that your parents are teaching you work ethic and that everything costs money and this is what we do to pay for it.
Yeah, for sure. And I learned that very, very young. And it's tough to understand because, I mean, like, it's hard to understand, especially when, you're younger and you're just like, man, why couldn't we, when you break something, you're like, man, why couldn't we have that new? And it's just like, well, there's reasons. Sometimes you just can't. Sometimes you just couldn't do it and you had to go out there and help. And sometimes you lose, sometimes you win. But it's like, yeah, it is nice. Like, I know I'm going to be ahead of a lot of people. I got a lot of faith in that. Even if this doesn't work out, I'm going to know what to do and know how to get stuff done for sure.
Well, you're also, your dad has a successful business that you can also jump in and you understand how it works and you may not want to do it, but you could roll into it to feed yourself if you needed to.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's not, I would,
careful,
I work with other people too. And I would do this too, but he always tells me, he's like, I don't want you to wash cars when you're older. So you better make this racing thing work. And it's funny. Cause it's just like, it's not what we want to do, but yes, sometimes you got to do what you got to do to, you know, make it.
Well, you know, every dad wants their children not to have to work as hard as they did. You know, and maybe who knows? I would have loved for my son to follow in my footsteps, but I didn't want him to have to work as hard as I do.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm glad that he went into medical.
Yeah. Something different. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's because he's successful and he's doing good, you know, and he's making more money than dad. So that's even better. Because when I need a loan, I can just call, hey, Danny, remember what I did for you when you were growing up?
Hey, man.
Exactly. No, he's a good boy. So Works had the iconic Havasu race, which is probably one of my favorites. It's rough. It's horrible. Destroys the machine. It's kind of like racing a mud race in back east, but a totally different style of destruction to the machine. And you had some success there this weekend.
Yeah. We had good success this weekend, and I needed it. Cause over here, I mean, I've been doing good, but it felt good to finally, like, you know, get back up there and finally, you know, it just felt good to win another race over here. I mean, I know I'm only in my second year, but it just felt good to get back up there. This Havasu was so weird because it actually rained basically all day Friday, and it rained on Saturday too. So it was like the track was like, if you think about normal Havasu, the sand is dry. Everything just like falls back in on itself. So like all the whoops, there's square edges, but there's not a lot because everything just falls back in. All the berms get all blown out. And usually, if they're side-by-sides, the turns get, like, way bigger. And there's usually, like, 3 quad ruts per turn. But this weekend, with the rain and there was no side-by-sides, the track was, like, the same sand whoops, but there were square edges in every single one because it packed together. With that wet sand, everything just packed in. And with no side-by-sides, I mean, all those big uphill, downhill, bowl corners, like, for anybody who's raced Havasu, you know exactly what I'm talking about, but it's just, Havasu is basically just like, it's almost like they're just hills, and then you just go over the top of it, and then you make a corner at the bottom, and then a corner at the top. It's just like these big bowl corners, and there was only one train track rut in, like, over half the track. There was no moving around, so, like, it was really hard to make passes because there was no moving around on the track. It was very one-lined and just rough, you know. So that was – it was so different this round than any other Havasu I'd ever raced before.
I got to race that when they had a monsoon.
No, like, really, like, muddy – or not – I mean, yeah, probably muddy in the sand too. Like, yeah, muddy race.
No, where – so you know where the starting line is – and Havasu.
Up on top. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, you go back when they used to run the gate at the where you go into the starting line now. They used to run the gate there all the way back, and you'd run a straight line all the way down to what would be the second or third turn into the race, and you'd go down the fence line.
Okay.
And it was 14 inches of water.
Just like all standing water on that track.
Yes, everywhere. And it was just raining and horrible. And people were stalling out. The rocks would come to the top. And, you know, we didn't run rotor guards and all these things back then. And you just,
yeah,
your wheels were locking up and you were having all kinds of issues. Yeah, I drowned it out and got it back running again. And yeah, it was incredible to experience that, a racetrack like Havasu being underwater.
Yeah, because that is not normal at all. I mean, that type of event in Havasu is like a once in a lifetime type of deal, because that's rare that you see like that there.
Right, and then we've seen it that it was 115.
Yeah, it's a very diverse track. It can be, there's a lot of things that could happen there. A lot of different variations of riding or dirt or weather, anything. It's a very weird track for sure. So it always makes it interesting.
Exactly. So how did the start go for you?
The start, I think I was third off the start, which was good. I think it was Travis and Logan. It was a dead end start. And on this year, I haven't been doing too good on my starts. I haven't been doing too good this year on starts. But yeah, third on the start. And then the whole first lap, I was behind, or I don't know how long I followed Logan for. I forget. But by the time I got around Logan, Travis had already actually started putting a little bit of time on, about 10 seconds. So it was like, once I got around Logan, I was like trying to decide what I really wanted to do. Like, I didn't know how the race was going to go. I didn't know if I wanted to push and catch up to him, or if I wanted to kind of like sit and just find like a comfy pace and then like maybe towards the end make a push. I just didn't really know how the race was going to go, but I ended up just like finding a pace that I was like, okay, I can probably handle this for a good amount of time. And then I caught up to Travis, rode behind him for two laps, and we were going pretty fast, and then I was just like, okay, I think if I got around him, I could pick up the pace just a little bit. And I was pretty over eating rocks at that point. I took a couple rocks to the arms, and I was just like, all right, I think if I just get around him, I could put a little bit better pace on. And that's what I did. I just got around him, and as soon as I got around him, I just kind of turned it up a little bit, and I was like, just kind of be smooth, don't make any bad decisions. I just wanted to have a little bit of wiggle room just in case a mistake happened. And I just kept putting time on. And then by the end, I was just at a comfy spot, and I was just able to bring it in, you know?
That's great. And that was where you got your first professional win on the West Coast, isn't it?
Yep. That was last year. That was the first win. It's Havasu and me get along. I won there all in my pro-am career. It's been a while since I've lost a race in Havasu. So me and that place just click. We get together.
Yeah, I had really good luck there too. As a as a mechanic sponsor and as a rider, I really, really enjoyed that place.
It's a freaking man's track. You gotta be willing to put down the work for that time, because it doesn't take it easy on you, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that Travis didn't boast more of a fight. You know, that's his hometown and that's kind of his environment.
Yeah, that's, well, honestly, that's kind of what I had thought all the way leading up to this race. I was excited to go to this race because I like it, but I was just like, man, I know Travis, you know, this is his hometown and he wants to win here, and this is what he rides in. So I knew it was going to be a rough weekend, just racing wise. But yeah, I mean, I've just been feeling good and I've been riding a lot, racing a lot. So my endurance was there and just everything was clicking for me, honestly. So it just worked out in my favor.
Have you been able to train in between all the travel? Or has it just been mostly racing?
Mostly for this past kind of block of racing. Like I said, we've been 7 weeks of just like straight racing. This next weekend will be the last one. And it's been mostly just racing. Like trying to train in between is pretty hard. Like at that point, your body is just like overworked. Like you spend the whole week working on your bike and then just trying to rest up, drink water, eat food. And so trying to add another training day in there, really just, it's not worth it at the end of the day. You just end up exerting yourself more and you'd rather just save the energy for the next round.
Really?
Yeah, not a lot of training days in between.
I didn't see that. I didn't see it that way. I would have kind of figured you'd have done some kind of, maybe not riding, but something, maybe cycling or something like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, I've just been, honestly, my whole goal this year with doing both of these was just the health factor. I was like, me and my dad were like, okay, we can do this. It's just a fact of, you know, we got to stay healthy. Like, you know, obviously injuries just happen, but we're just like, we got to be solid. You know, nothing dumb can happen to prevent us from doing this. So I've just been trying to focus on making sure my health is good, not getting sick, and just like not beating myself up too much. Cause I mean, at a certain point when your body's just like so done, it's like not even worth it to spend the money to go all the way over there. Like if I'm like, dad, I'm so tired, I can't even race right now, then it's hard to justify flying all the way over there and racing. So I've been just like really trying to focus on resting up and making sure I'm ready to go come weekend.
Have you seemed to notice any type of fatigue at all?
Not so far. Luckily, I've just been, like I said, I've just been really just focusing on sleeping and nurturing myself. So like no major fatigue yet. I haven't got to a weekend yet where I'm just like, dude, this is a rough, this is hard. Like so far, I've been having good luck with that.
That's good. That means you're eating right and you must be, you know, taking good supplements and getting plenty of sleep, because that's, your body recovers so fast and so good when you sleep. It's unreal.
Yeah. And that was the key. That's what we talked about before this. We're like, and it's funny. I told my dad, I was like, we're going to spend the least amount of money on practice bikes we ever have this year, because I'm never going to get to ride. But it was just, it's true. And it's been working so far. So I'm happy.
Well, your sister's a professional athlete also.
Yeah.
Has she given you any tips? Cause I know she's a little older than you. Does she have any tips for you? You know, because what she does is mountain bike riding, racing, and that's gotta be, you know, just hell on your body.
Yeah. There was actually a short period of time, not a short period, but there was a time where she was actually, before she had like signed on to her like big deals and like it became like her full-time job, another way she made money was she would coach other people through the apps. And she coached me for a while. Like she would give me all my workouts throughout the week and when I needed to ride, what I needed to do. I don't do that anymore, obviously, just because she doesn't worry about that anymore. That's her job. So she worries about herself. But then also I just kind of figured it out on my own. And yeah, a lot of supplements. I don't do a lot of the supplement stuff, but I mean, like, there's some things that she like showed me, that has helped me a lot. Like just different type of things to do before your race, after the race, how to recover fast. And so she's showed me a lot of stuff like that too. Yeah.
Well, you're 17. You're indestructible right now.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. Well, I don't even feel like that right now, dude. I hurt bad, and I know it's going to be bad when I get older, but right now I just work through it. I'll deal with that later.
Bro, you have no idea.
Yeah, that's going to be rough, but it'll be worth it.
You know, as long as you keep training and keep active, it won't be as bad as if you stop.
Yeah.
If you stop training and stop staying active, oh boy, your body's going to just totally reject you.
Yeah.
It's unreal. I mean, the reason I was later tonight coming in to sit down with you is I was out training, you know?
Out getting a workout in. Yeah. I mean, even if I stopped racing, our family, what we do, we're always active anyway. So, I mean, like, I know I'm going to be active no matter what I'm doing. So that gives me a little bit of hope too.
Right, right. Exactly. Where's your next race?
Camp Coker, South Carolina, North Carolina. I don't know which Carolina it is, but it's South or North Carolina. It's Camp Coker. It's another sand race. It's kind of like Florida. I've been to Camp Coker, not to race, but I've been there for like a camp deal. And, it's a little similar to Florida. There's sand, there's hard packed, another kind of more R speed race, like more kind of work spy, but I don't know. I've never raced there before. I've only ridden there. So it'll be another new event. Yeah.
When's that race?
This weekend. We leave on Thursday.
Nice.
Yep.
Cutting the travel a little close.
The travel, I mean, no, I mean, so far everything's been pretty, we've got away with everything so far. In between Georgia and Florida, that's the only race of the year that's like one weekend, then you race another weekend. And we stayed in Florida that whole week. So like we didn't come home and then fly back. We stayed there the whole week. And everything else has been, you know, like we go to the works weekend, we get home Monday, we prep on my works bike, and then we leave on Thursday, get out to the GNCC race, and then I prep my GNCC bike, then come home. And then that's just kind of been the cycle so far.
After you get home from Camp Coker, where do you go?
After Camp Coker, I'll stay in Florida for a week. I'll stay there until probably like Thursday. And then I come home, and then we actually have 2 weeks off. Both series have 2 weeks off. So I'll be at home, and then we go to Tennessee, and that's the double round. I'll go race Tennessee on Saturday, then I'll come home and race Blythe on Sunday.
Yeah, Blythe is not going to be an easy round for you.
No, Blythe is going to be another, it's going to be a survival round, like get a points round. I'm just hoping to get out of there just with a solid finish, honestly, because I know I'm going to be, you know, beat. But yeah, like I said, we were like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it all in. So it's just like, we just got to get it done. And that's what we decided to do. And we're just going to go for it.
That's so awesome that you guys have taken on such a huge task to run both series. And, you know, with only one confliction, you couldn't have picked a better year, because it does. Usually there's two or three.
Yeah, last year it was like half of them. Literally last year, I think almost every single round conflicted. So it was like impossible last year. But this year, when we saw the schedule, and we'd already kind of been talking about it, and I'd already been riding over there more, we saw the schedule come out, and then we just finally made the decision. We were like, we're going to do this. We're going to do it this year. We're going to make it happen. So, yeah, we picked a great year to do it.
It is. That's so awesome. I can't wait to watch the results and see how you do at Camp Coker and, you know, the works races. And I'll just be watching and filling myself in on there to get you back on so that we can hear what it's like to race in those places.
The team here at ATV Talk would love your feedback. Please email us at hello@ATVTalkPodcast.com.
San Diego's Body Evolution and Wellness Center. With over 17 years experience, Dr. Heidi looking out after all your chiropractic needs and Coach PJ looking out after all your fitness needs. Visit our website, www.bodyevolution.org, or call for an appointment, 619-987-8875. If you're in need of a consultation for your current racing program, a custom ATV, or an industry guest speaker, I have the company for you. Duncan Technologies International Inc. offers host, MC, and guest speaking services at events. Builds custom ATVs for recreational riding or racing around the world. And they offer consulting services for professional teams or individual racers. Send inquiries to DuncanTechInternational@gmail.com or call 619-716-1532 for more information. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, don't forget to share us with your family and friends. The podcast is available on all streaming platforms, and you can find us on social media as ATV Talk Podcast. We're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Rumble, and Twitter